Good afternoon. This is Paul Kelly. I'm your host on today's Speak Up Arkansas. We're going to be talking about events, current events, but our real purpose here is to have a conversation with you, for you to give us a call if there's something you want to discuss, something that's going on that concerns you, something you think other people need to be thinking or talking about. And we're going to start trying to get it started here in just a minute. I do want to remind you that our telephone number here is 501-433-0088. You can give us a call here and be a part of the discussion or start a discussion about something you're concerned about. The purpose of this program is to inform our listeners, to talk about a lot of it's political, some of it's philosophical, some of it is related to service and the needs of other people. And we'd like to hear from you. And if you have questions, you can call us or want to make a comment. You can do that also. You can also, if you'd like, if you're a shy person, doesn't want to talk on the radio, you could just send us an email at speakupar@gmail.com. So let's get started. I have in the studio with me today two guests, both of whom I've known for a while, and we had Jim on here last week. Jim Lynch is here with us. Everybody knows Jim. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing fine on a Wednesday afternoon.
And also new to this the program is Susanna O'Daniel. Susanna, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you.
Susanna works for AEA. She is pretty involved in politics, and she has an opinion about a lot of things and gets around, knows what's going on. If you want to know what's happening in the city and thoughts about what ought to be done, Susanna's the person to go to. So I'm glad to have you here.
Thank you.
I know that one of the things I want to talk about, I'd like to, well, let's start with Little Rock. Is there anything going on in Little Rock that folks would like, either of you? We talked about community policing a lot last time and about the homeless there. I'm thinking the biggest thing that I was paying attention to was the time for comments on the building and widening of I-30 through downtown Little Rock. I think the close of business day Tuesday was the last of that. So that's being done.
Well, what I am getting ready to say isn't going to be very optimistic or uplifting for those of us, I include myself, of folks who would like to see that project reconsidered from the baseline, meaning is it really a good idea for the long-term health of the city and the region to widen the interstate from, 6 to 10 lanes? The truth of the matter is the State Highway Department's in control of this. It's not the city of Little Rock. And the politics of it are, and I'm just going to name a name here because I've done a little research, but we have a state highway commissioner. And that's a big time political appointment in this state. It's a 10-year term. Everybody wants to be on the state highway commission. It's big stuff. This Thomas Shook from Little Rock, he has been around for decades. He is in the construction business. I've forgotten the name of his companies, but he is one of the, his company erects the steel superstructures for buildings, and then they put on the buildings and all that sort of stuff. But and I'm not saying that Mr. Shook has a conflict of interest. I would think that as a highway director, he couldn't bid on highway projects, but he's certainly very, very well known in the construction community and knows people that will bid on highway contracts. But my bigger concern is his political influence. If you go to the internet and now you can check campaign donations, federal, state, and local, if you want to take the time. I've done some of this. Tom Shook has donated to everyone for decades in tens of thousands of dollars. And I'm afraid that notwithstanding the good arguments that those of us on the other side have, in effect, you widen highways, and what you do is what results is induced traffic demand, meaning put another couple of lanes out there and
they'll fill them up.
And they fill them up immediately, and now you need two more lanes. And of course, you know, it's kind of like, where does it end?
Right.
But those arguments have simply been ignored by the highway department from day one. And I'm afraid that this is the fix was in from the get-go.
Right.
That our elected officials in the city and cities have long-standing relationships with people like Thomas Shook. And this is a very big uphill battle. I'm not optimistic at all about where it's going to go.
You know, I just remember what it was, how the city changed when 630 came through. I mean, the divide there, I mean, it separates things. And the whole idea of cutting the downtown, we are having this wonderful development just east of there. And if we're going to add all the lanes and traffic and all that other sort of stuff, it just takes away from what is really felt like sort of a little small urban little river market that was really something. But it's going to have to compete with a lot of noise and a lot of traffic and a lot of construction, and it may feel like something a whole lot different when it's all said and done.
Well, and this is not something that we can solve in an hour radio show or even with a consistent political campaign. We live in a car culture.
Yeah.
And unlike Europe, I've just returned from Europe in the last 6 weeks, where I spent a couple of weeks. You know, Europe is more compact. They have great public transportation. They value public transportation. It runs on time. It's clean. It's efficient. It's dependable. But Europe is more compact. They have to make better use of their space.
Right.
We have so much space in North America that our solution is, you want to do something new, Susanna? Want to go to someplace different? Well, let's just get in our car and drive 250 miles today. And that's what we do.
Right.
And not only do we want to maybe just for recreation or entertainment, but we may decide to live 80 miles outside the city, because now we've got somebody has the political muscle to lay enough concrete to make these interstates and state highways sufficiently wide, broad, and fast enough to where it's feasible for, not to bring up a touchy subject, but I will, for Little Rock policemen to live in Greenbrier,
right,
and drive in every night.
Yeah. One of the things, you know, that's interesting is looking at Europe and the model that they've used there. Of course, they have this public transit system that is complex and well-organized, as you mentioned. I lived in London a number of years ago, and one of the things that they did there is that they charged what was called a congestion fee. So if you wanted to go within a certain area of central London, you actually had to pay a significant additional amount of money to come into. It was called a congestion charge.
With your vehicle.
That's right. If you wanted to drive into central London. And so I'm sure that, you know, has a whole host of other issues associated with it, but it was really how they were able to get the buses moving through downtown and things like that, and really kind of build a city around public transit and move people that way.
Well, cars and the car culture, I mean, it's really, I mean, can you imagine how much the car industry employs in this country?
Right, right.
That's what we do in this country is build cars,
right,
and then we use them for a couple of years and then buy new ones.
And uh-huh. I think the other thing I want to add about that is that anytime you have a project like this, an infrastructure project, a major project, it's an opportunity. You know, it's an opportunity for us to reimagine and re-envision what it is that we want. And that's my concern, is that we're going in the wrong direction and we are really lacking imagination in how we're deciding to build this.
Yeah, because I don't think that's the trend for the really attractive cities that people want to live in. It's got green zones. It puts traffic away from places where people hang out and all of that. But all right. Well, that's
well, if you got it, if you got an opinion about I-30 bridge widening, call us. We need to hear from you.
That's right. Well, the amen corner on that. You know, I was thinking about the city of Little Rock, and I worked a lot of meetings for hours on end for more than a year to develop a new plan for the children and families of the city of Little Rock. And we came up with a plan, and we they hired consultants. It was a really fruitful process, and I'm getting the sense that that plan is actually now being completely ignored. And I I'd like to get the mayor up here to talk to him about that, because they talk about a plan, but then particularly the leadership does not get in front of it. Those prevention, intervention, and treatment programs that we created back in the 1990s was very successful. It reduced youth arrest by 75% in the course of like 4 years when it finally became fully funded, and it has an impact. And I think the whole research and the plan was in reaction to skepticism from a lot of the board members who really didn't like the idea that we were being so strategic about spending money in places where there was a high concentration of kids who really needed it. They would rather like to spread that around, but we're going to have to I'll try to keep up with that on where that goes from here.
As a juvenile justice veteran, as I know you are, Paul, you're the wrong one.
I only got arrested once.
Well, I didn't mean it in that sense. I meant because of your interest in juvenile justice policy reform. But what is the age at which I, as a young adult, teenager, let's say I'm 15, 16, 17, can I just go buy a gun without anybody's permission and own it? Because here's my point. The headlines locally are full of gun violence in the last 6 to 12 months. I talked to an experienced policeman years ago. We had a huge wave of gun violence in the early 90s, and it finally subsided. And he was one of the people I ended up talking to, and I said, well, what did the police department do? And he says, we got the guns out of the hands of the teenagers.
Right.
Are teenagers allowed to just get guns?
No, they, I mean,
I know they can do it on the black market, but what's the law say?
You know, I'm not sure, but I would assume surely it is at least 18 before they'd be allowed
to
purchase a gun.
And get a permit, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. You know, but I mean, unless there's something to do with hunting rifles, because people like to take their kids hunting, but
right.
I don't know. But the answer to your question is, I don't know. I'm sure there's somebody out there who knows that, but I do think that is a... I remember that, too, back in that time, that was a big issue.
Well, I would love for someone to call in and inform not only those of us here in the studio, but in the listening audience, what can we do to get these pistols out of the hands of teenagers?
Right. All right. Well, again, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas, and you're part of the program, and you can give us a call here at 501-433-0088. Susanna, I know you have been following some state politics, and I'm sure you have an interest in the 2018 elections coming up in Arkansas. What are your thoughts and comments about that?
Yes, actually, one of the things I wanted to make sure the listeners were aware of, and as we have more and more people starting to, I guess, re-engage, and some people newly engaging in politics and the policymaking process, one of the things I wanted to bring up and is really some of the structural issues that aren't always really apparent when you're just voting and kind of reading about the different candidates. And those are the ripple effects of some of the powers that are held by the people in these offices. And the 2018 elections have some really significant impact, are going to have significant impact on the future of our state for the next decade. And that is because the Secretary of State, the Attorney General, and the Governor are all three a part of what's called the Board of Apportionment. And this group of individuals working together essentially will draw the lines for the legislative districts in our state. Now, for those of you who are kind of new to politics and policy, essentially what this means is after the census every 10 years, the U.S. Census, we get those numbers back in, and we make sure that each of the legislative districts, all 100 House seats and all 35 state Senate seats, are redrawn equally so that we all have equal power as citizens when we have our state representative and our state senator. And that is going to have lasting implications for multiple election cycles and will really have an impact on, I think, a lot of policy making decisions, and also about how loud different groups' voices can be within that. And one of the things that got me thinking about this is just this week we saw the U.S. Supreme Court get involved in a case out of North Carolina, really looking at some of the gerrymandering, particularly along racial lines out of North Carolina. Texas has been involved in multiple lawsuits, really right across the South. We've seen a lot of people starting to bring suit about how some of these lines have been drawn and different special interests that are working to make sure that the lines are drawn in a certain way to empower and in some cases disempower certain groups within those legislative districts. So whoever wins those statewide elections, again, of governor, attorney general, and secretary of state in the 2018 elections will be on the Board of Apportionment. The Board of Apportionment consists only of those three offices and office holders. So it's those folks who are going to be drawing the maps to determine what legislative districts we live in, both in the House and the Senate, and who can serve in those. So that is going to have some real lasting implications. So the 2018 election will happen. Those folks will still be in office and after the 2020 census. And then in 2021, which sounds far away now, but won't be, it'll be in a blink of an eye, they will start that process to redraw those lines. And that, again, will have implications, again, for the next decade moving forward. So,
well, to put, I'm going to, it's not original with me, but it's a slogan that is absolutely so true. But this drawing the lines for state Senate, state House districts, it's the Board of Apportionment, Governor, Secretary of State, Attorney General, and the common wisdom would be that, it should be done on a nonpartisan basis, one man, one vote, and all that kind of stuff. But we have now gotten into a situation in this country where it's from the get-go a wholly partisan process. And so if the Republicans control something like the State Board of Apportionment, those lines are going to be drawn to ensure Republican winners, vice versa, same with the Democrats. The system has been turned on its head. I really like this slogan. It's an easy way to remember it so that people perhaps can pay more attention to it. We have a country that is built on the notion that voters choose the elected officials, right?
Right.
But through this gerrymandering and redistricting, elected officials are now choosing the voters.
That's
to make
right.
sure they continue in office.
Right.
The system has been turned on its head.
Right. And there are other ways of doing it. Other states have done it. An independent oversight with
yeah.
a commission
That's
and
right.
that sort of thing are certainly a good way to avoid any kind of questions or lawsuits. And it would certainly uncomplicate things if you really put it into a
nonpartisan.
Approach.
Right. So as I just wanted to remind voters, as different candidates are stepping up, both to run for re-election and other candidates possibly challenging incumbents for those seats, to be aware that those are the offices that will be redrawing our lines in Arkansas for a decade to come. So it's going to be a really important choice.
Very important.
You're listening to Speak Up Arkansas on KABF Radio 88.3. Give us a call, 501-433-0088, and we'd like to have a conversation with you. I want to talk about something on the national level that I have been following, and I think it's starting to heat up a little bit more, but and it's called net neutrality. You know, when you go online and you have certain expectations, you expect to be connected to whatever website you want. You expect that your cable or phone company isn't messing with the data and is connecting you to all the websites or applications or content that you choose. You expect to be in control of your internet experience. When you use the internet, you expect net neutrality. Net neutrality is the basic principle that prohibits internet service providers like AT&T and Comcast and Verizon from speeding up or slowing down or blocking any content, applications, or websites you want to use. Net neutrality is the way that the internet has always worked. In 2015, millions of activists pressured the Federal Communications Commission to adopt an historic net neutrality rules that kept the internet free and open, allowing you to share and access information of your choosing without interference. But right now, this win is in jeopardy. Trump's FCC chairman wants to destroy net neutrality. And on May 18th, the FCC voted to let that internet killing plan go forward. So we have got to contact the Federal Communications Commission. We've got to contact our legislators. And I tried to look up and see how all of our legislative body representatives voted on this. I couldn't find it before coming to the show, but net neutrality is the internet's guiding principle. It preserves our right to communicate freely online. It means an internet that enables and protects free speech. It means that the ISP should provide us with an open network and shouldn't block or discriminate against any applications or content that ride over those networks, just as your phone company shouldn't decide who you call and what you say on your call. The folks that own these broadband companies shouldn't interfere with the content and your ability to get the information that you need. I cannot, and the idea here is it needs to operate like, not like a business, but like a utility. It's just like your water. When you turn on the tab, you expect clean water, quickly available, that's healthy, and just like everybody else, and you can pour out as much as you want. You may have to pay for it, but you still are assured that you're going to get what you came to the faucet to look for.
Paul, what would be the net neutrality doctrine? I understand it's under assault. Why would someone want to change it? What's the benefit to some ISP or some of the big cable providers to not have net neutrality?
Well, they can.
I understand part of it.
It's money, okay? That's the bottom line.
It's always money.
It's always money. And they can. Verizon is involved in that. It got really cloudy because they just had people who laid the wires and put things out and developed the broadband. But then the people who owned that wanted to start figuring out ways of benefiting from it. So they could slow down
my service.
Yes, yeah, they could.
And then, if I wanted faster service, I'd have to pay a higher rate. Is that the idea?
They could deliberately speed up or slow down traffic from specific websites and apps. In short, the rules are intended to prevent providers from playing favorites.
I see.
And benefiting from that
playment
of favorites.
And if
they own all this stuff.
Right.
And if they own and operate broadband, then they're going to pull everybody to their stuff and not to others. And it's not going to be neutral. We want to be able to have access to everything. I use the analogy, you swim in the, in net neutrality, you get to swim in the stream, but you have to pay for anything that you want to consume along the way.
Yeah.
Not have to pay to get into the
stream in the first place.
Because all the things that Verizon and Comcast and AT&T will offer is something they can make money off, but they want to do on top of that, they want to control it. I mean, it's a control thing.
Well, if I'm a website, if I'm a content provider, and I want to get in the stream on an equal basis with everybody else, as is the case now, hopefully it will remain the case. But the idea is that the corporate entity that's providing the pipe can come to me and say, we're going to slow you down unless you pay a higher fee. Is that the idea?
But they can also determine which content they're going to allow to move quickly slowly.
They can charge more for higher speed, and they do.
Already?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if you want high speed as a...
A DSL line and
right.
all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so that's something that they can do. No, they want to control the content and put it in. And I want to quote, this is something from G.G. Schoen, a distinguished fellow at the Georgetown Law Institute for Technology, Law, Policy, and... today, the Trump FCC begins its dismantling of the internet rules that protect American consumers on behalf of a few huge companies that control their access to the internet. Net neutrality rules ensure that customers can control what they say and do online. But the chairman of the FCC prefers to give control instead to Comcast, AT&T, Verizon. It is an outcome that no American wants, regardless of party ideology. So it's money and control, which sounds like a common theme to me in America and in the world, quite honestly. Yep. But the fact of the matter is it's in the hands of administrative, it's an executive function, and the legislator, our elected officials have already given it an okay. So it's a real possibility that this could happen. And it doesn't seem to be getting people's attention because when I first looked at it, it was really complicated because it had a long history.
This really highlights what a lot of people also don't think about, and that is the power of agencies, whether they're at the state level or at the federal level, because they are the ones writing the rules and doing the regulatory side of policy making. And when you have a major regulatory change, a lot of times that can happen without a law passing, and that state or federal agency has really decided how those laws will be implemented. So Congress or the Arkansas legislature could pass laws all day, but really there is a lot of power retained by the agencies because they write the rules and regulations about how those laws will be implemented.
Yeah, well, again, I want to encourage you. You can contact the Federal Communications Commission. You can call your legislator. I've got all of their telephone numbers here in front of me. If you want to do that, I can, if you know who your legislator is, I can give that to you. But that's easy enough to find on the internet. I'm just amazed at how much, even when I have guests on the show, they don't give out telephone numbers. They give out internet addresses. Right. And so everybody is paying attention to the internet and trying to get things done on it.
Well, KBF, we broadcast over the internet.
Yeah, we do. Live streaming, yeah, that's correct. Any other thing on the national level that we want to talk about? I think we're going to take a break here, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. All right. Thank you for listening to Speak Up Arkansas.
Суда бисе кавулини юрейна.
Давате.
Неге минкани я фамуде. Камина аманди амани селаде.
Давате.
All right, a little bit of Tumate Diabate on Speak Up Arkansas. I usually play them on my world tour show. I love the guys, so I just like to share it anytime I can. It makes me calm and relaxed, and I hope it did the same to you. Mm-hmm. But we're going to get riled up again because we're about to open up the phones again and remind listeners that if you've got something to add or something you want to talk about, please call in 501-433-0088, or you can send an email at speakupar@gmail.com. I'll be looking for my phone to see where I put that, because that's on my phone. There it is. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about some state issues. I know next week's show is actually going to focus a whole lot. Arkansas Advocates is going to come in, and they're going to be talking about health care on the national level. So this may be a good precursor to that, if you want to talk a little bit about what's going on with the governor with that.
Sure.
Susanna,
sure.
Take it away.
So Arkansas, as I'm sure many of your listeners know, completed a state legislative session just in April. And then just a few weeks after that, they came back. The legislature was called back in by Governor Hutchinson to consider some additional pieces of legislation, which primarily focused on kind of reworking our Medicaid expansion program. And Governor Hutchinson appeared on the PBS NewsHour last night to discuss his plans for the future of that program. It started out being called the private option. Well, it started out being called Obamacare, I guess, the Affordable Care Act, then Obamacare. When we implemented it in Arkansas in 2013, when the legislature passed it here, it was called the private option. Now it's called Arkansas Works. So two of the big changes that the governor is seeking and that he went on PBS NewsHour to discuss are what he describes as additional flexibility for the states. And that flexibility actually comes at a cost of approximately, it's estimated that 60,000 Arkansans could be taken off of the Arkansas Works Medicaid expansion program. The governor says he hopes that those folks are moved to the healthcare exchange, where they can actually purchase health insurance that way, but they would no longer be on this kind of Medicaid expansion pool where they receive coverage that way.
And that was sort of those making more than 100% of poverty. And
that's right.
Up so, to 130 something.
Right. So right now the federal law says that the Medicaid expansion will cover folks up to earning up to 138% of the federal poverty level. And this would reduce eligibility should the governors get the flexibility he is seeking from the Trump administration down to folks earning up to 100% of the federal poverty level. And just to give your listeners a sense of what that means in dollar amounts, 138% of the federal poverty level for one person, for a single earner, is $16,394. So this would reduce eligibility down to those earning at or below $11,880, and that's an annual amount. So that reduces eligibility significantly for the Medicaid expansion program in our state.
Which you can't call those people wealthy. So,
well, what is Governor Hutchinson's rationale for going from 138% of poverty to 100%? Why does he want to do that?
So what he discussed last night on PBS is that he hopes that the states will get additional flexibility to operate the program in the state. As you know, and I'm sure many of your listeners know, Medicaid is a state and federal partnership. And so when states want to make changes to the eligibility criteria for their state, they do have to apply for a waiver from the federal government. And so he says that he thinks it will reduce some of the costs in shifting some of the folks onto the exchange, the healthcare
exchange.
Well, not
if Donald Trump has his way or Paul Ryan, because they're getting ready. If that House plan survives, which the political experts say it won't, but if it survived, the deductibles and the premium costs would just go out of sight. There wouldn't be somebody earning $16,000 is not going to be able to buy any policy anywhere that's worth any kind of coverage at all.
Right. And actually, Governor Hutchinson did comment on PBS's show last night about many of the flaws in the House version of the health care reform bill that was passed a few weeks back. So
yeah.
He was critical of a lot of the provisions in that bill.
Well, does does this flexibility that he's seeking in Arkansas, is that dependent on what the Congress does? It's all in the hands of the Senate now. And actually, from what I read, the Senate could take 2 years to do this.
Yeah.
Right. So it isn't dependent on what's currently moving through. Because he will likely get approval. Essentially, he applies for waivers. And the two main waivers he's applying for are to reduce eligibility from the 138% of federal poverty down to the 100% of federal poverty to be eligible for the program. And then he's also trying to seek a work requirement for those on the program. He had applied for that previously under the Obama administration, and they did not grant that waiver. And so now he's going back and requesting that work requirement waiver from the Trump administration.
Would that begin July 1, the beginning of the state physical year? Or
I believe it'll be at the beginning of 2018 is when that goes into effect.
Okay.
But that would go into effect. So essentially, the state legislature had to kind of say, yes, please, we will implement these waivers, go seek these waivers from the federal government. And so now the governor is seeking those from the Trump administration.
So we're going to make sure that people between $11,000 and $16,000 a year, we're going to make it triply tough on them to get health insurance.
Right. So those folks will need some assistance to make sure that they can get enrolled in the marketplace. If at all. That's right. And not every plan on the marketplace is eligible for a premium subsidy.
Right.
Those folks would still be eligible for a subsidized plan. Insurance coverage, but not all of the plans are eligible. The subsidy doesn't pay the entirety of the premium as it did on the straight Medicaid expansion.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a lot of education and outreach to the folks affected by this.
And I think it's still a moving target, the whole shebang, because the federal government can come in and limit Medicaid funds. So, and you know,
they'll pay for and what they won't pay for.
Block grant, you know, just give them a block grant and let them fight it out.
Right.
So, all right. Well, and then
there's always more to be said about Medicaid, but that's some of the high points and some of the things that are really kind of in progress here in Arkansas.
Well, next week on Speak Up Arkansas, this will be the whole topic.
Great.
And I know there's at least going to be four people talking about it, so you stay tuned for that. You're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. This is hopefully is wanting to include some of the listeners. I think you're out there, and if you just, I guess maybe we're just captivating, you know, they're hanging on our next word and don't have anything to say, but you can, and we'd like to hang on your words for a while, because you're the folks who we're trying to communicate with and for, so give us a call, 501-433-0088. Well, there's the health of our people, and then there's the health of the planet. Now, the health of the planet I was on the way over here. They were talking about the barrier reefs off of Australia and how they were about to disappear.
Yeah.
And So, and we have sort of a climate where there's no problem with the climate.
On the way to the studio, I read a snippet that said it's not official. The president hasn't announced anything official, but some of the major news sources are now reporting that he has already decided to pull the U.S. of A. out of the Paris Climate Accord. Now, I am not an authority on these global environmental matters, but in just a phrase, the Paris Climate Accord, in effect, commits all those nations, dozens and dozens of nations. I was told that Nigeria and Syria are the only two nations that didn't sign on, and if we pull out, we'll be the third. And what it does is it's a collective effort to limit the temperature of our atmosphere to an increase of no more than 2 degrees over a period of time or whatever. This is critical because all of our human activity, we're in effect burning the carbon-based fuels, is enveloping the Earth like a blanket, and it's trapping this warm air. The warm air is heating our atmosphere. It's melting the ice, and sea levels are rising.
Right.
And so people in low-lying areas, some of these South Pacific islands, are just going to disappear.
Yeah.
I mean, literally disappear. They need to move. And then you've got people living on the shorelines of our own country. I mean, people in Florida kind of need to call the president.
Right.
Well,
those down in the Delta ought to be calling them too, I guess.
This is unbelievable that we can't bring ourselves to cooperate over the long term, because these kinds of agreements are so intricate and so delicate to negotiate.
Well, and
can you imagine getting all these nations to cooperate on a single goal? Reduce the warming of the atmosphere, and we can't agree to do that.
Right. Well, it's we were considered the leader in all of this.
Absolutely.
And so it's a new day.
Caveat I read was someone said, well, imagine the Paris Climate Accord being like a big international party, and we're at the party. But then the coolest person or persons at the party leave the party, and so now the party is less interesting to those who left. It's not that the accord will fall apart, but if the USA pulls out, meaning we're the cool people, we're the cool country, it will become less of interest to the rest of the world, and that's the real damage. This won't destroy the accord, but our pulling out will, not to put a pun on it, but we'll throw a wet blanket on it.
Yeah. All right. Well, anybody got any ideas out there about how we can deal with changing minds about
global warming?
Global warming.
Especially that of Donald Trump.
Right. Okay. All right. It's still Speak Up Arkansas, and it's still time to give us a call here at 501-433-0088. I'm going to take a little aside here. I'm going to get a little philosophy into all of this, because one of my favorite people was Mahatma Gandhi, and he was convinced that much of the violence in society and in our even personal lives stems from the passive violence that we commit against each other. He described these acts of passive violence as the seven blunders. So I'm not going to read all of them here. I may take them up on my world tour show, since he's from India, and it'd be a world view. But I'm just going to read one of them, and that is and when they talk about passive violence, not doing something causes violence.
Acts of omission.
Acts of omission. But this one is called Wealth Without Work. There is enough for everybody's need, but not for everybody's greed, Gandhi said. we are all well-trained consumers willing to prey upon those who produce goods at the lowest price on the backs of others, so that we, paralyzed by our self-loathing, seek to own, to sexualize, and to find the Holy Grail. Gandhi's idea originates from the ancient Indian practice of tenant farmers. The poor were made to slog on the farms while the rich raked in the profits. With capitalism and materialism spreading so rampantly around the world, the gray area between an honest day's hard work and sitting back and profiting from other people's labor is growing wilder. To conserve the resources of the world and share these resources equitably with all so that everybody can aspire to a good standard of living, Gandhi believed people should take only as much as they honestly need. I always liked the term, live simply so that others may simply live. Or maybe the new age one is sustainability. So this is just one of the blunders that he identified as something that is, in fact, economic discrimination is an act of violence, passive violence, by refusing to acknowledge the worth and the value of others' work and meaning.
And I think that's a great concept to keep in mind. Last week, we just saw the Trump budget come out that really embodies the opposite of what it is you just discussed, that really takes from the poor and gives to the wealthy.
Yes, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, this is Sarah Lynn from Little Rock.
Hi, Sarah.
I would just like to point out that that quote from Gandhi is definitely something that Donald Trump should take to heart. I wish that someone would go up to him and tell it to him right in his face.
I think you're going to have to tweet it to him. That's what he understands.
Well, so far that doesn't seem to work. All he does is go on crazy rants and tweet things like confete.
Right. We still don't know the definition of that word, do we?
Not yet, but he said for us to figure it out, but I don't know.
Well, thank you for calling, and if you want to hear more about Gandhi, tune into my show on Sunday. I'll probably be reading
the other six philosophical, yeah, Gandhi tenets.
Unless you want me to go on to the next one. I mean, it generated a call. I mean,
thanks
maybe
for
we
your
should.
Call.
Yes,
it
thank
did,
you very much for listening. Yeah, thank you.
I think the quote also applies to the whole healthcare situation.
Absolutely.
As well, because if one understands that you shouldn't take more than what you really need, and you should give back, and the whole idea of just being a good human being, contributing to the rest of society, then you would see that the health care plans that have been proposed by the Senate and by President Trump and really by Asa Hutchinson, then that it doesn't apply. It needs to be more emphasized, and the education is really where it begins.
That's right.
And it applies to net neutrality also. There's always, you know, there's a difference between need and greed, right?
Right. You have to find a balance. And I think that everybody inwardly knows what that balance is. But the greed and the selfishness, it gets in the way.
Right. Well, thank you very much for giving us a call, and thank you for listening to our show today.
Oh, no problem. I'll listen all the rest of my life.
All right. All right. Thank you.
Have a good one.
You too.
Bye-bye. All right. You can give us a call at 501-433-0088. We always like to hear from listeners, and you know, if one calls, we know there's at least 30 of you out there that's just listening. So I don't know, the number goes exponentially, I'm sure, beyond that.
Well, you know, politicians think, you know, most folks are consumed with their jobs, their families, their church, taking care of the things in their immediate orbit. And so politics is not in the immediate orbit of most people. So if politicians get six calls on something, that means they think that there must be 600 people out there who think it but didn't have time to do it, which is why it's important, as Paul has already said, call your senators and representatives on this net neutrality issue. The FCC, much like the Supreme Court, even though they are a rulemaking body, they pay attention to public opinion, too. Some congressmen and senators started to raise concerns about the direction the FCC was headed, I guarantee you the FCC would change direction.
Right. And it is public comment period, and
that's
you
right.
can. That's why we're talking about calling them, but you need to also call your legislator and let them know. You know, it's amazing. People, I mean, it's hard to find out how somebody voted on something. And I try to read the paper on the votes, but I don't always get it every day, or it comes on a day when I don't have the time. But now that I'm retired, I may read the whole paper. But anyway...
Just another point on the net neutrality thing, just to remind your listeners that this is the same administration who has already signed a bill into law allowing internet service providers to access our browser histories. So they are not above doing these type of things within this realm of internet service providers and really kind of acquiescing to their demands.
And so the idea is they take the browser history. And what? It in effect becomes marketing data?
Right.
Yeah.
That's what they said.
Yeah. Yeah, that's part of what they already do. But I think that's actually a different issue, but it's another example.
But it already has
of
been signed by this Trump administration into
how
law.
Money is being made off what we are now dependent on. I have to go to the internet to get my bank account. I mean, I don't even get sent a statement. I've got to know how much money in the bank. Everything's got to be on the internet. Heck, all of my retirement money's on the internet.
And I think that is why it is such a huge issue, is because it has become a utility, just like water, just like electricity. The expectation is that you have access to high-speed internet. To do business, just to be a citizen in the world these days.
Mm-hmm. The example of this is, you know, your internet service provider could control where you could go online rather than giving you full access to the internet. Just like cable television, they could offer you a basic internet package that limits you to specific websites and content. Then they could make you pay for premium upgrades to access other sites or content, like video streaming or gaming websites. So it's just another way to make more money and not guarantee that. Well, we already have a divided economic. Our middle class is gone. We've got the haves and the have-nots getting...
The have-a-lots and the have-very-little.
Yeah. And this is just another example of being able to... and the power that comes from the information and the access to what's on the internet is really huge. It helped take down the Russian government back when perestroika happened. It happened over the internet.
Well, I think in political terms, which is I guess a hobby of mine, I try to pay attention, but in this November 16 election, one of the things I paid attention to was which candidate, Mr. Trump or Secretary Clinton, was spending the most. What were they doing in the field? Did they have field offices? Did they have organizers doing all those things that they traditionally do? Mrs. Clinton was just tromping him. I mean, she raised and spent, get this, over $900 million. He raised about half that much. She had all the field offices. She had all the staff in the field, all much more than he. And yet he wins the election. And now it's clear that one of the things that he used that offset her other advantages was the internet.
Absolutely.
They absolutely pounded social media with tons and tons and tons and tons of misinformation about her. I mean, I have... couple of good friends whom I respected then and I still respect now, but they were Trump voters. And when they found out that I was going to vote for Hillary, it's like, well, you can't vote for her. Well, why not? And it's because they were going to all these websites. And of course, I was unaware of the websites because I'm not interested in some rumor that she's running, you know,
drugs,
a heroin ring out of the back of a pizza
right.
parlor in Washington, D.C. But that's what they emphasized. Yeah. So it's a powerful tool.
It is.
And if someone else can control what you hear, imagine then the cost, the money that would be spent by somebody who might want to spread misinformation.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the main things, I mean, along the same lines that we're seeing with, you know, different media outlets buying each other, and we don't have that diversity in our media anymore.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's the same lines.
All right. Well, I hope you're, you know, we're a little riled up here. You may be wanting to relax and have dinner, but before you do, we want to give you something to dream about, and you can dream about Gandhi and just try not to think about all the other things that are going on. But if you want to speak up to get it off your chest, you've got, well, not too many minutes left. But again, this is Speak Up Arkansas. And I want to remind listeners, too, that, you know, we're an equal opportunity program. And if you have something you would like to hear discussed on the program, you can just give me an email at speakupar@gmail.com, and I'll entertain it. If you give me your contact information, I may call you up. And in fact, I'd like to have information on some of the folks who are really curious about and willing to help put together programs. I'm open to ideas, and if you have something like that you'd like to help with, or some suggestions about who you'd like to hear from, I'd be glad to know that. This is your community radio station, and this program is for you. Well, we're about to come to the end of this. Susanna, thank you very much for
thank
coming
you.
Up. And
thank you for
Jim,
having me.
Good to see you again. And
thanks for having me.
Next week, you'll be hearing about health care from all the staff over at Arkansas Advocates. You're listening to KABF 88.3, Speak Up Arkansas. And again, you can just email us at speakupar@gmail.com. All right. I'll see you on the radio next week at 5 o'clock. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to KABF 88.3 FM in Little Rock, the voice of the people.
It's time for Radio Cows, a weekly program from the Central Arkansas Library System. Every Wednesday from 6 to 6:30 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 FM, we will share with you conversations with interesting Arkansans on primary sources, Chewing the Fat with Rex and Paul, interviews with some of your favorite musical artists on Arkansas Sounds, content from the Butler Center's collections, information about what's happening in the library system, and much, much more. We invite you to let us know what else you want to hear by contacting us at radiocals@cals.org. This program is presented by the Butler Center for Arkansas.